Imagine with me the age of the ancient Greeks, the land of Greece broken up into city-states with each their own emphasis, certain gods they preferred over others. And if you were to walk through the streets of ancient Greece, you'd see the houses lining the streets, chariots running by. But what you'd notice more than anything else is the great stone temples that rise from its midst. You'd be able to see these stone edifices that really are prominent compared to everything else. If you were to go up to them, you'd see the wonderful stone columns carved with the stories of the Greeks, stories of the gods and what they did and how they helped humanity and whatnot. Walking around the edges, they'd continue to tell those stories until you enter the temple. Inside the temple, you'd see one of the great gods, probably in a giant statue, with some of the minor ones seated around him. People would come in and out as they were offering sacrifices, making their prayers, or just visiting as a prayer of homage. And this would be common throughout the Greek Empire, as people would go from city to city making their pilgrimages. If we were to travel 2,000 miles away, we'd enter the land of Israel, a very different land. And if we were to go to Jerusalem, we'd notice something right away. There's one place that's prominent compared to the rest of the city, this mount. And on this mount is surrounded by the walls of Jerusalem, and a great temple rises from its midst, the only one in all of Jerusalem. There is just one. If you were to go through the gates and enter into the temple area, you'd notice very quickly how busy it is, with people coming to and fro as this bustling city is alive with the energy of the Jewish people. The temple, a great stone edifice, with gates blocking off entrance, so that only those who are righteous, only the ones who are Jews, could enter through those gates. But there's no imagery. They're just solid stone walls. The temple, much like that. The temple was just stone, no carvings, no images, a great stone edifice rising from its midst. As you enter through the gates, you'll see all the priests offering sacrifices on the altars, with myriads of sheep and oxen and doves consuming the whole area. So many sacrifices being offered that the first century writers speak of the rivers of blood that would flow from the temple as up to 2,000 sheep and oxen a day were slaughtered. Blood poured out, and the blood splashed on the altars. This was a very, very busy, prominent time for the Jewish people. If you were to go further, you'd walk up to the big bronze gates that block the entrance to the temple. Opening those doors would be an awestruck sight, as the walls are inlaid with gold, the entirety of all the walls, just solid gold, with images of pomegranates and palm trees, images from the world, to show that this place is a microcosm of the world. There would be candles flickering with the gold light, casting shadows and dancing in the gold. There'd be the altar of incense, that these billows of incense would fill the temple area and billow out through the doors. And finally, the Holy of Holies, the curtain in the very back of the room that would block everyone from seeing God himself. There's no two contrasting images sharper than during that time, where you'd have the polytheism of Greece with all their myriads of gods, their myriads of temples, and all these people wandering to and fro from their worship to the centrality of Judaism, the one God, the one temple, the one place. As we see in our gospel for today, Jesus gives us a picture of what's happening in the temple at that time. It's not this wonderful just ritual. There's things that have crept into it. One of the most prominent things is that people don't really carry livestock anymore. Sometimes they have other kinds of trade. So they'd come to the temple to buy their sheep or their goat or their oxen or their birds, whatever they need, and then they would bring those for the sacrifices. But then we have another issue. During the Roman occupation, the Romans used the coin the denarius, which was common throughout the empire. The denarius has the image of Caesar on it. That is an engraven image. You wouldn't dare bring it to the temple without defiling the temple. So they needed money changers. People who would exchange the denarius for the temple currency so that you could use the temple currency to buy the sheep so you can offer the sacrifice. There's no regulations. Money changers can charge whatever they want for each denarius. And the people selling these sheep and oxen and doves can charge whatever they want because you don't have another choice. So it became a place of corruption, a place of kind of a sad realization of where the Jewish people have become. But that's not where we need to focus. We need to focus on Jesus' words. The temple is not just a stone edifice. The temple becomes his body. And the temple becomes our body too. But we are temples of the Holy Spirit, We can encounter the living God by going deeply inside ourselves and realizing His Spirit is moving in and with us. And in that way, God is present with us. We can worship Him rightly. In the same way, it's hard for us to grasp the chaos of the temple because we like to compare the temple to our modern-day churches. Our modern-day churches are very quiet. They're very peaceful. There's not a lot of activity in them. They're not bustling with activity or noise or sound. They're usually very quiet. Where the temple was full of sound. Can you imagine up to 4,000 animals braying and howling and doing whatever they need to? Then you have all the priests that are slaughtering them and the animals screaming, and then you have the blood and you have the rites and you have the words and the people's prayers. It's just full of chaos. Much like our lives. We may like to think that our lives and the centrality of God in our lives is very calm and peaceful, but it's not. Lots of us are being plagued by the same issue we had then, that we may actually ascribe to gods we don't realize. We give more energy and time to something that is not God, treating it as though it would be our God, which is why we have to be careful. That would be a violation of the first commandment, have no other gods but me. And the Jews are very clear about this. There were no other gods in the Jewish temple. There was no even idea of other gods, to make that point very clear. This is where worship is. This is God. Even as we go further, if we want to keep that centrality that God is one and our only God, there are no others, His name is something very special. His name is something not to be used incorrectly or with vanity, leading to the final point, the third commandment, which then flows into all the others. God set up a day, one day of a week, for us to encounter Him. He knows how busy our lives are. He knows how hard it is for us to realize His presence. So that day is a day of quiet, a day of calm, where we take time to realize what He has done. Reflect on the week before us, saying, where was God? Where did I miss Him? To find out what He means for us, to spend time in prayer. We need that time of encounter. We need to walk into our own temples and meet the true and living God. The challenge for us, though, this is not easy. This is very difficult for us to keep that kind of focus in our lives, to realize how important God is. But yet Jesus gives an example, and it comes in the form of zeal. Zeal's fun, that fiery, passionate energy that encourages us to do things. But we like to think of zeal as though it's kind of this impulsive force that forces us to go do stuff. That's not the zeal that Jesus gives us. His is very calculated. He plans it. He feels the burning energy within Him, but He spends the time and effort to do it right. As He's seeing all the things happen in the temple and the way that the temple has lost its focus, He takes the time to sit there and build this whip out of cord. He spends the time and energy to think about what He ought to do and how He is to make His point known. It's not just running in, guns blazing, swords flashing. It's very precise. So that when He gets there, He drives them out, except for the doves. For the people who have doves, He tells them to leave. And I think that shows His level of care for the poor, because the doves and the turtle doves were the offerings of the poor people. So He had planned out everything to the point where after He drove them all out, He sat there and taught them. He explained to them what a temple should be, how we ought to pray. This is the same for us. If we want to really live in such a way where God is primary, the commands become our way of life, we need that zeal. We need that drive, that energy that drives us into the mystery of God, helps us to really cultivate our lives around Him. We need to pray for that passionate energy that helps us to weed through all the chaos and confusion and wander right up to the temple gates where we can say, "You are my one God." And when we use this energy, when we cast out all that other stuff from our lives, that zeal drives us forward, then we can really say, as a Song of Songs does, "I have sought Him whom my heart loves.